Welcome back, everybody. We are now going to turn on recording, and I want to introduce our guest, Doug Baumel. When there are two words that come to mind, one is family business and one is conflict, my immediate reaction is Doug Baumel.
Thank you.
Doug is the founder of Continuity Family Business Consulting, and it's more than Doug Baumel. There's actually a firm with a number of people. The firm specializes in conflict management in family businesses. Doug is the co-author of Deconstructing Conflict, Understanding Family Business, Shared Wealth and Power with continuity partner Blair Tripp. Doug's insights have been featured in Family Business Magazine, Thomson West Alternative Dispute Resolution Practice Guide. Doug holds an MBA from the Wharton School and at the university, and a BS in electrical engineering from Cornell University. And we were just talking before the meeting, and his son is at Cornell and will be graduating. So, congratulations.
Thank
So,
you.
why don't we go around the room first? And I'm going to ask the spokespeople to tell Doug what they've decided, how they would handle this. Then I'll ask Doug to comment on the comments. The first group is Kathy, Doug, Elaine, and Mitchell.
And we
All
nominated
right.
Mitchell.
Yeah, at bayonet point, I might add. But I'll take a stab at it. A couple of things. First of all, Jerry, who was the CEO for some period of time, possibly has better insight into the growth trajectory of the company. And in the past, the company has taken on debt to finance distributions, and that debt was repaid by growth. But now you have Jerry, who has concerns about the growth trajectory of the company, and he's made it clear he does not want to take a structured loan. And so maybe his reasoning, if he were to take a structured loan, it would likely be secured in whole or in part by his equity in the company. And if he says he doesn't want to do that, that to me would be highly revealing. And also for the company itself, if Jerry has voiced concerns about risks in the future, the company shouldn't want to take on debt to finance the distributions. Even though they have done that, it has done that successfully in the past. We also, see that members of of Gen 3 are working in the business. Apparently, not all of them. Some of them are working in the business, and they have a vested interest in not only just from employment, but this is a business that Grandpa founded, and so it's important to them. So when we looked at the alternative suggestions, and by the way, one that was not on the list that we felt at least should have been considered is simply do nothing. Jerry is a minority shareholder, and we say, look, I realize you would like your big distributions, but the company's not in a position to do that. Just live within your means, and maybe you can take out a loan against the equity yourself with a private lender. Who knows? But do nothing is an option. But when we considered, all the options, if you rule out taking on debt for the reasons I just talked about, or making a specific loan to Jerry and he doesn't want it, so you knock out those two possibilities. We also understand that, there are a lot of reasons why a company might not want to do an IPO, and that is the transparency of a public company, the costs of maintaining a public company, the pressure on short-term performance over long-term performance of a public company, and the transparency. This is a privately owned business, and once you disclose the ownership of major shareholders, that's for the whole world to see, and it allows others to kind of get into your knitting. So you rule out the IPO, and then again, the sale of the company, I think, is is problematic because you have family members in the business, Gen 3, and you have this great connection to the family. So we felt that the right way to go was find an equity partner, and we're not suggesting that it would be for a majority interest, because I think we all know that having a silent partner for a private equity company is a private as a silent partner. They're not silent, and they have their fingers in your business. But there are private equity investment firms, family offices, but also middle market companies that take long-term investment positions, and they'll take a minority position, and they'll let the company run their company and do their business. And so we felt that under the circumstances, the best option was to find an equity investor who would take a passive minority, meaningful by minority role, provide the equity to take Jerry out. And if I miss something, Kathy or Elaine, please let
That's good.
You did a good
weigh
job.
in.
Excellent
Thank
job.
you. Thank you, Mitchell. The next group is John, Ken, Larry, and Stefan.
All right, and I was elected to or selected to be our spokesperson. And we actually, long story short, we came to many of the same conclusions, I think. I'm going to offer a couple of other insights. We felt like an IPO was not the move for many of the same reasons. The exposure, the risk, competition, there are headwinds. It's not clear that it's going to be successful. In terms of taking on debt, yes, we've done it before, but now there are headwinds. Now there's more competition. They were successful in the past in repaying that, but we're not so sure, and even Larry's not so sure that they're going to be, or Jerry's not so sure that they're going to be successful in doing that in the future. Loan is pretty much the same thing, and Jerry's not interested in a loan. Selling the company, why force this? Why should one, disgruntled sibling force the sale of a company at this point in time? Just doesn't seem to be the right move. It's not something the siblings might necessarily want. So we ultimately came down as well with the equity partner idea with a couple of nuances. One is that you have a CEO who's been working for you for 10 years, very successfully, and we want to make sure that that CEO still feels valued. We do not know what the share structure is, who's holding, A class shares, who's having B class shares. But if all of a sudden, you have the CEO and you bring in somebody else with an equity share, if that CEO doesn't have equity, you kind of have a tougher situation there where you might be, inadvertently showing your CEO the door, which is, I think, not the intention here. Also, rather than bringing an equity partner, the other siblings could simply buy Jerry out. They could structure it over the course of several years. Have to be a little bit careful as well with the structure of the trusts for the kids. We thought that, if Jerry goes out, his whole line goes out. We don't want the kids then coming back to take another bite at the apple. But how are those structured? Are his kids actually working? So that we had a couple of other questions just in terms of our line of thinking. But ultimately, it was all variations of three. Basically, how do we buy Jerry out, or put it on Jerry to, find an equity partner that is suitable to the rest of the board.
And
So
Steve, we
that was our
also,
report.
yeah, and
That
Steve,
fair
we
summary?
also, we, yeah, excellent. And we also agreed about the, option six there is just, tell Jerry, sorry, we're not interested in giving you a distribution.
Yeah, the do nothing.
Okay, thank you. Next group is Amita, Jack, Jay Lee, and Sanjay.
I guess, I drew the short straw, so here I am. So again, very similar to the prior two groups, but here are the reasons. IPO for $300 million top line company did not make sense. Not enough top line. Starbucks compliance and other aspects will take up a lot of that. For whatever reason, we did not get into the, airing dirty laundry type of issue, but the compliance was the big reason we said no IPO. Outright sale, well, before that, taking on debt We did not know the EBITDA of the company, so we didn't know whether that would be viable. So we did not spend a lot of time there. Loan to Jerry, of course, he did not want it. We did talk a little bit about do nothing. Seems like the company's operating well. Why not keep doing that? The one we sort of spent a lot of time on was finding an investor. Initially, we started out with a minority stakeholder. And I believe Jack said, the valuation would be crushed if an investor doesn't get a majority position. So, and because of the G3 and all that, we did not think it made sense to either sell outright or to give this investor in a majority position. However, I guess the compromise we reached was find an investor, sell a minority piece today with an option to the investor in n number of years down the road to buy at a better valuation, all or more equity. So that's where we landed.
Thank you. And our last group is Craig, oops, let me just, Craig, John, and Robert.
Robert was nominated to share our finding. So a couple of things. Our general consensus is that this business is at its peak with the advent of AI and relatively rapid deployment that a lot of companies are taking. And there's a lot of experimentation going on. We talked a little bit about some of the experiences that I have with some of my the companies that my students are working at. But with that as peak, we are worried about value of this business in 12 to 24 months time period. So that was one consideration. The other is we would really like to continue having Thanksgiving and Christmas and whatever other holidays the family gets together with all of them. In spite of the fact that Jerry is agitating for more money, if you will, in the near term, that was a consideration. A couple of things. We want to start with a more proper valuation of this business. We have an offer on the table that of 800 million that may be a good offer. It may not be that good an offer. And so that was a question for us. With the assumption that this is business is as close to its peak, at peak, close to its peak over the next 3 to 6 months, if you will. And guys, you can help me out here. The plan A was probably try if we can convince the patient partners, that's it, Tom and Linda, to take our money and to go. That was a strong consideration for us. The other things, IPO, we'd agree with in terms of size and scale of this business. We made some assumptions about EBITDA and cash and those kinds of things, but the finding investors and debt and those other things were those were problematic for us just because of the future that we envision for this business, and we expect that companies like Amazon and other of their larger customers are gonna bring this in-house because it'll be fairly easy to do. So that guys, help me out. Did I miss anything? Did I misspeak?
No, good. Thank you very much. Doug, now I'll turn it on to you. Please react to what you've heard.
Well, let's start off with I'm a family business consultant, so I was brought in because of the family conflict. Okay, I wasn't bought in to help them make a decision about capitalization. So, yes, they had, from one perspective, the two siblings that did not need the liquidity. They viewed their sibling, Jerry, as greedy, as an overspender, etc. Jerry said, "I was right on two other occasions. We needed to take some chips off the table that helped our lifestyles, and the company was growing fast enough and profitably enough to cover that debt, and we made out better. So trust me, I know what I'm doing. I was the CEO. I know this business well." Jerry said it's important to have a big distribution now for the same reasons. The two other siblings were more risk averse. They did not want to do that. So there was an impasse. We worked with the family for many, many months, and we explored these different options for liquidity. And to Mitchell's point, yeah, there should have been a do nothing on the list, and I regret not putting that on there. There should have been. That was sort of always in the background because the two siblings that were aligned could have just frozen them out and said, go pound sand, But they didn't do that. They engaged. They spent quite a lot of money on consultants to try and bring this home. Now, some of the information that was not included in the case had to do with the third generation. The third generation was in this, I said they were seven G3s. Were actually in reality a few more, but let's say there were seven G3s, some of whom, two of whom worked in the business at fairly low entry level positions in software. But this was a family that had been raised really well, and they had a prior consultant that did some good work. The prior consultant created a family council. So every 6 months, this family would get together. They would talk about the business. They would share the financials. They basically got a board book, as soon as they were of age. And they would be walked through the board book. So the kids really understood the business. Legacy was really important to them. This was the business that grandpa started. This was the business that paid for everything, and they all lived very well. This was the business that Jerry helped build and grow sort of exponentially during his reign. This is the business that they saw their parents slash uncles and aunts take a back seat to management. They saw their family, they saw their parents leave management and steward the business through governance. So they had a really good sense of, you don't have to work here to make an impact. There are many ways that you can make an impact. The kids were raised really well. They were taught to find their purpose in life, not to assume that the family business is their golden ticket to fame and fortune and an entitled career. Those that entered the family business were sincerely interested in being a lower level software developer, on the line. That was what they could have gotten elsewhere, and they were happier to do it for their own family business. In fact, not because they had different last names, many people in the company did not know they were working with a family member. It's pretty extraordinary. They kept a very, very low profile. So bringing in an equity partner was sort of an anathema to this family. It did make sense on a lot of levels. In fact, one of the things that we do as a family business consultant, the consultancy, is we put these options on the table. I work with a lot of family offices. These family offices had a legacy business, they had a liquidity event. Now they want to, with their investment arm, they want to look for opportunities to help other family businesses in the same field succeed. So we look at them as a source of patient capital, industry knowledge, connections for the right family. And occasionally we are able to matchmake and collaborate with actually some of you guys that help us match make those matches. But nevertheless, even though we tried that route, sharing leadership with a with another family, sharing ownership with another family, just was not right. The family felt a responsibility to forward grandpa's legacy, keep this in the family, or selling out was an option. The family was committed to staying together. Whatever they were going to do, it was going to be together. So buying out one family member was, again, not an option. That was quickly rejected because that would have split the family. And family cohesion was the number one thing. That's why they brought us in, because family cohesion was being threatened. The loan would have given one branch significantly more liquidity than the other two. That would have impacted the family in a similar way as buying one out. That group of cousins would then, they'd be on their yacht, and the other two families would not. So they felt that this would also cause the family relations to start to degrade. We call it, and if you read our book, it's called the family factor. They thought, and we corroborated, that wealth disparity in families can cause significant corrosion of the family factor. So they were committed to whatever they were doing, they would do together. So either it was do nothing, or it was do something that they could do in concert. So selling the company was an option, but the valuation wasn't there. And they also did not, selling the company didn't sit right on many levels because of legacy, because of responsibility. The third gen was brought up to believe that they would have their opportunity to lead this business. And unlike other families I work with, leadership was defined very broadly. It wasn't just, being the CEO or working in the business, working your way up, managing people. They saw leadership as being an engaged owner. They saw leadership as being on the board if they were the right family member to be on the board. This wasn't a family that, my branch has to be represented on the board, and they weren't that kind of family. It was a wonderful family that can make some really good, far-reaching decisions together. Let me s just go through the list. So selling didn't get a lot of traction. That would be a loss of legacy. Finding an equity partner, that would be a loss of control and a loss of their sense of responsibility to do this themselves. Loan to one of the owners, to Jerry, would be increasing wealth disparity, potentially damaging the relationships. Taking on significant debt, they didn't have the stomach for it, and taking on significant debt to pay each equally was a problem. They felt that the company couldn't take on that kind of debt in the face of the headwinds that they all knew they were facing. The board came back, Robin came back with the committee's recommendations to do the structured loan. And we went pretty far down that path. Even though it would cause the wealth disparity, this was a family that was in conflict. And while they did not want to lean into that, they did not want the wealth disparity to push them further down the road of disconnect. They were already pretty disconnected. So that was considered. And the negative was it would push them further down the road. They would not be at Thanksgiving dinner. That would be the end of that relationship, et cetera. And Jerry didn't want that because he said, this does not solve my problem. My stock would be pledged. And if I see the business going down the way, if I see competition coming over and damaging the value of the business, I'm going to be screwed. So none of those were an option. I'm not a capitalization expert. But I put on the table, consider an IPO. It's clearly can be dismissed from a lot of the reasons why you all said it's not a non-starter. But this was also during COVID when valuations were sort of through the roof. And we had Robin go back and look at what the implications of an IPO would be. And we went to the family council meeting and talked about what would an IPO do to this family when your wealth is public. And I'm reminded, and I mentioned that in the other group, reminded of another case that we had working with another family where one of the parents came to us and was distraught. They were distraught because their daughter was at college and flew back after spring break. And the roommate, who comes from the same airport, not the same town, but the same airport, said, "How did you get here?" And the roommate said, I flew." And the roommate said, "Well, there are no flights arriving now from Philadelphia. That doesn't make any sense." That's when the thread started to unravel. She flew private. She must be wealthy. It impacted all of her relationships with her friends. She was the wealthy one. They Googled her for the first time. And they found out, this girl did not come from a publicly traded company, so there wasn't that, very apparent number associated with her wealth, but they could see from what they learned on the web that she was the wealthy one in their friend group. So when they were going out for pizza and beer, they'd say, "Well, why don't you pay for it?" That kind of thing. It wrecked a lot of her friendships, and the woman was distraught. We helped that family, and we helped the girl prepare with sort of scripts about how to manage wealth disparity in friendships and things like that. So, but for this family, we were ahead of the curve. We were able to talk to the family about the impact of public knowledge of their wealth as a family. What would that do to you? What would liquidity do to you as a 17-year-old, as a 25-year-old? What would the impact be in your circle of friends? In your professional relationships, because you're one of the siblings worked at a volunteer hospital, volunteer at a hospital for special needs kids. And when her coworkers would find out and be able to Google how much are you worth, that could damage a lot of the professional relationships she was trying to build in her field. So we had Robin come back with the impact of what an IPO would do. Would it be successful in that current environment? And we asked the CEO was, of course, on that committee. And the CEO came back and said, if we had an IPO, that would open up some investment in the company, which if we're going to play this game for the long term, we would need investment in international markets. We'd need investment in new product development, which they were struggling with at the time because of cash and some other things. But they saw the CEO said, "I don't think the family will go along with this because of the transparency and the publicity issues, and because of the scrutiny and all of that and the expense. It's unlikely that the family would support an IPO, but if it did, we could really use that kind of money. That would solve the problems of those competitive headwinds, at least in the near future." So the CEO was able to have that conversation with Robin, the chair. Robin came back saying, "I don't think the family's going to go for this. No family wants to be a public company." When we had this several meetings with the entire family, And they decided to go for it. They decided to go for it in a stepwise manner to make sure that they weren't getting over their skis. They ended up having a very, very successful IPO. All the family members, broke out the champagne at the end of the day. They each took some money off the table, but you can't take too much money off the table. And they were able to, over time, take more and more. The funds generated by they had a $300 million plus IPO, and they reinvested for growth. They had to reconstitute the board. One of the negatives. So what's going through Robin's head? Robin is saying, I'm not public board material. I'm going to be fired. I'm going to be exited. So she, of course, felt that it wasn't in her individual best interests for an IPO, but she was kept on through the process and exited shortly thereafter. They got some stellar board members who supported the existing CEO, who's still there. What else can I tell you? What questions do you have? So yes, the answer was the IPO. Surprising, everybody.
So, Doug, what percentage of their company did they give up for the 300?
I should have had that number handy. It was in the 20% area. It's minority.
So that would be a billion-dollar valuation, 200 million above
Plus,
the 800.
yeah, it was over a billion.
What is the age of the siblings when you guys were involved? Because, the need for liquidity might be more than Jerry's, right? Or soon
So
it could be.
their kids were all 17 to what, 28. So they were in their 40s, 50s. 50s. Let's say 50, early 50s. And me and my partner Blair, we were down there visiting, doing another session with the family. And the two of us were saying, "Is there, what are we missing here?" What we were missing was the prejudice against, or the bias, not prejudice, the bias against an IPO. And when we first surfaced the idea amongst ourselves, I've never taken a company public, and we didn't take the company public. We held them together through that process. We educated them about the process.
And Doug, you said this was done during the COVID times. Was
Yeah.
it reverse merger through a SPAC?
That was considered, but no.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I don't profess to be a capital markets guy. And we knew that even suggesting it, we were on thin ice, because I could not speak with authority about valuations, what exchange would it be on, and what are the rules? I knew enough to put it on the table and to hand it off to a committee for consideration amongst these other things. And when I got the pushback, and the pushback that I heard was not so much technical, but emotional. And we're the sort of the emotional counselors in the room. We're not therapists, by the way. I'm an MBA, as you know, and Blair is also an MBA. She studied psychology in undergrad, but I was an engineer. But we've been doing this long enough to understand and to recognize when decisions are being made emotionally, not rationally. And the decision to avoid, in this particular case, even discussing the IPO was emotional. It was fear-based. And we said, well, can't let that stand. It should be considered. Now, it could fail on the technical side, but we're not the judge of that. We're the judge of, are you avoiding something out of fear. And that's what they were doing. And I have to say, Robin was avoiding it. She was great. It was a he. I just changed it. He was great. He was older. His time on the board was going to be drawing down to a close. He saw benefits to him personally by being part of this public offering. He'd get some cash. They spread around a lot of cash, a lot of stock to the CEO and to the board members, and they did the right thing. But there was also a selfish part of why Robin, in this case, resisted the IPO, because that would hasten her exit. And that didn't sit right with her. She was dad's pick to be their first independent director. So there were a lot of emotional issues on the table. I'm not saying I was smarter than anybody for the IPO idea. The luck had a lot to do with it, with COVID. This was started before COVID. If COVID didn't hit, would they have gotten that valuation, or would it have failed? Who knows?
Jay Lee, your hand is up. Do you have a question?
Oh yes, Doc, thank you for sharing all the full story. It's very intriguing in a sense that so it seems to me that you correctly spotted that the emotional value of this enterprise is worth so much that the family was willing to go through the hassle of going to do the deal. At the same time, again, I think that you are very smart in terms of the timing. The
No,
IPO,
that's luck. That was luck.
sure. And both luck and good planning and strategy that the IPO actually yielded them more, a better valuation. So in the end, from both the emotional side and also the monetary side, it justified that. And on top of that, it also gives them some option down the road. If the third generation wanted to get more involved, they can always buy back and take it private. So in our discussion, I guess I did not consider the just like, not willing to let another party to take control of the enterprise just weigh so much. And that's clearly an important aspect in the decision here. Well, thank you for sharing that.
Sure.
Anyone
Yeah.
else have any comments, questions?
And keeping control of the enterprise, forwarding the legacy of what Grandpa started was crucial. And this was a way to do it. And we built in off ramps at every stage, when they were hiring the investment bankers, when at any stage. We had meetings. Are we still on board? Are we still on board? Is the third gen still on board? So we had all of these potential off ramps, and our job was to manage the process, not to advocate. So we don't have skin in the game, right? So we were able to manage the conversations about, does this still make sense? Are we still on board? What if this? What if that? They stayed together and they did it.
Good.
Sadly, I'm not surprised by Robin's behavior. I've been on two other private company boards. One was a family business board where the directors had decided to take action on some significant actions on the part of the CEO. And at the last minute, some of the more tenured legacy, for lack of a better term, board members decided to back out of it because at the end of the day, they were worried that they would not be able to remain on the board. And essentially, that was their retirement legacy. And it's so disappointing when that happens.
But it's very real.
Yep.
And we were able to talk to, I forgot his name. Let's call him Robin. We were able to talk to Robin and have him voice that to the family. And the family, they had a they actually had a beautiful ceremony for his service on the board when he exited. And he felt really good about it in the end, that he helped usher in this new paradigm of ownership.
Interesting. That's great. Thank you.
Well, I'm going to exercise my role as timekeeper and thank Doug very much for writing the case and thank Doug very much for presenting it. It's interesting that the chosen case was exactly what everybody said don't do, and it worked out. But that's so is life.
We were shaped by the case study that the two of you wrote, kind of
That's
led us
true.
down the garden path.
Right. Well, I thought I was giving, tipping the hat when I said, why did she push back on the IPO idea? But I wanted to the point of the case was a platform to talk about the importance of the family dynamics and emotional decision-making piece. And so I'm glad we were able to get that out.
Larry, the only comment I'll say in our defense as a group is we probably looked at it through the lens of contemporary timing, and this company is way too small to even get a banker, let alone to go public. So we probably discounted it so readily because of the small size of the firm.
Well, we look forward to seeing you all next month, and we'll have another case. In the meantime, I'm here in Long Island, and the weather was 71 degrees, so it looks like spring is indeed coming. So enjoy the good weather when it comes.
Thank
Take
you,
care,
Larry.
everybody.
Take care, everyone.
Thank you,
Pleasure.
Larry,
Case. Thank you.
Thanks,
As
Larry.
always.
Bye.
Thank you, guys.